Okay, I guess we'll get started. Welcome to today's talk about Milchemet Mitzvah. And does everybody hear me? Somebody just acknowledge. Okay, great. So it used to be in the old days that you would just get up in the classroom and you would talk. Today we have to do it all this high tech. We're on Zoom, and today's class will involve a lot of sharing. I want to show you text. I want to show you video, audio. So I'm going to try to do it as seamlessly as possible, but I apologize if there might be some interruptions, some breaks as I try to do share on share. So just a quick introduction to the topic. As everybody here knows, Israel has now been engaged in a war, a two-front, three-front, four-front war already that's been going on for over a year. It's the longest war that the state of Israel has known. It's been a very costly war in terms of lives, injuries, and society, what it's done to society, economically and socially. And in Judaism, we have, for all things that take place in life, we have halachas that help us get through them, halachas that define how we act in certain situations. And regarding war as well, there are halachot about war. But in order to implement those halachas, one needs to categorize the type of war that's taking place. And the basic question we're going to start with today is this a Milchemet Mitzvah, an obligatory war? And again, that's a title, that's a name, that's a definition that we give within the halachic system to a type of war. And with it, it carries lots of ramifications. And maybe we'll mention a few of them. But it's a very serious topic because how we define war defines what we have to do during that war, who participates, what leniencies might apply during the war. And it's a topic with a lot of serious ramifications, and yet a topic that there are very, very few sources going back over the last 2,000 years, because the idea of an independent Jewish state in the land of Israel engaged in war wasn't something that existed for the last 2,000 years. So there aren't a lot of sources in the interim period. And now there are sources. There are sources we're going to be talking about. There's no source sheet. Rather, the sources, as they come up, as I mentioned, they're going to be video, there's going to be audio, and there's going to be text. I will hopefully be sharing as we go along. And as I said, there are a lot of ramifications. One of them may be who has to go to war. Can there be an exemption for yeshiva students? Can there be an exemption for haredim, however we define that? That's not what I'm going to talk about. There are other sources that deal with that as well, meaning these sources we're going to talk about today are relevant to that conversation, or I could say to that controversy, but that's not going to be the principal topic today. There are ramifications regarding kashrut, regarding what the soldiers can eat or cannot eat, regarding risk-taking, regarding things that may seem as mundane as laws regarding toilets while in the military camp. But this issue today is going to be how to define the law, the war. Is it a Milchemet Mitzvah or something else? Now, how did I get into this? I don't usually talk about this type of topics. What got me started thinking about it, well, let's see how we could do this. We'll start with this. Was an article that was in Mishpacha magazine. This is the front page of the article that appeared, I would say about, does everybody see my screen? Sorry. Does everybody see the screen? You can see the Mishpacha? Okay.
Can you make it downloadable for us?
I'm sorry?
Can you make it downloadable for us?
We
I don't know
only
how.
see
Don't
we
see
only see your list in
We
open.
only see the list, okay?
If you
Sorry,
do
I was.
share and touch on your screen, you'll be able to open it and we'll be able to see it.
Right over here, this, and then here. Now, do you see it?
Yep.
Do you see now this picture of a rabbi there with text underneath?
Too small.
Can you make it downloadable for us?
No.
I have no idea how.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Do you see now the picture? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, this was the front page of an article that appeared in Mishpacha magazine. As you could read, it starts off, it discusses the Haredi draft issue, a controversial issue. It was an article written by Gedalia Gutenberg, but it was an interview with Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz. Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz is Rosh Yeshiva of Eish HaTorah, well known in the Israeli-American Haredi world. He has his own kollel. I don't know him personally, but he has a reputation of a Talmud Chacham and as a Rosh Yeshiva and a leader of American-Israeli Haredi community. In the middle of this article, do you still see now the text? You now see another text. So in the Torah world of Shkafis, yes. So this is a question in red. It was an interview of Rabbi Berkowitz. So in the Torah world of Shkafa, Torah world meaning Haredi, why is what's going on here not indeed a Mechemes Mitzvah? And Rabbi Berkowitz answered, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked by one of the Rabbanim of Kfar Chabad years ago whether Israel's wars fall under that category. He has a tshuva in which he writes that to meet the definition of a Mechemes Mitzvah, you need a Jewish king, you need the Urim V'Tumim, etc. This is the whole answer. This is what he gave, these two paragraphs, for this question. I read this, and I was intrigued. Not being an expert in Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas and all of the Igros Moshe, I've read some of them, and I was intrigued because I was surprised that Rav Moshe Feinstein had written about this topic, and I was further surprised he would have said such a thing, which seems to be contrary to the Rambam. So I said, you know what? I'm interested a little to follow up. And I looked up the Igros Moshe, and the Igros Moshe wasn't exactly the way Rabbi Berkowitz presented it. And that's an understatement. So that was the first impetus. Once I realized that, the second impetus I had was a warm memory I have of a two tape series that was made by Rabbi Shalom Gold. Rabbi Shalom Gold, it's too bad that Rabbi Kalman left. Rabbi Shalom Gold was a rabbi for many years in Toronto. He was then a rabbi in West Hempstead. And then he put his money where his mouth was. He was a very outspoken religious Zionist. He made Aliyah mid-career, was a rabbi in Har Nof in Yerushalayim, as well as a regular teacher in the OU Center in Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Gold, 15 or 20 years ago, came across a two-part series, or actually he made a two-part series, came across a lecture by Rabbi Berkowitz. Rabbi Berkowitz, the same Rabbi Berkowitz, had given a lecture about religious Zionism. And Rabbi Gold was, shall we say, livid by what he heard. And let's see if I could just play you the first few seconds. Hold on one second. Again, share. We have to. It should be saying we got share sound. And
okay. I promise you, I've listened to the tapes and can understand why you were so confused and disturbed. There is much that I have to say about the lectures, and since I don't want to be accused of any misunderstanding or taking words out of context, I will tape some of the sections I wish to deal with and then respond. As a general statement at the outset, let me make it clear that I know Rabbi Berkowitz only by reputation as a fine scholar, Talmud Chacham, and a defender of halacha. Unfortunately, I know him also from these tapes, and they present a completely different person. The tapes are replete with inaccuracies and falsehoods that I hope are the result of ignorance and that beg for a response. Differences of opinion are valid and legitimate. In fact, they are the stuff of which halacha is made. The honest give and take that sees as its objective the search for truth is the hallmark, the beauty, and the guarantee of a dynamic living halacha.
And what Rabbi Gold does is he goes on these tapes and he gives little snippets from Rabbi Berkowitz, and then he responds to them. I want to give you one example from Rabbi Gold, and then the way I'm going to structure our shiur today is after I read what Rabbi Berkowitz said in Mishpacha magazine, I discovered that Rabbi Berkowitz had a shiur that he gave in January, meaning well into the war. The war started October 7th. Rabbi Berkowitz gave a shiur about this very topic. And what I'm going to do is give little snippets from his shiur, and then we're going to respond with the actual sources and see how accurate they were. So I want to give you one snippet that Rabbi Gold does. And those of you familiar with basic sources in the religious Zionism Haredi debate will recognize what Rabbi Berkowitz is talking about and may even know the Rabbi Gold's response before you hear it. But I think it's very – Rabbi Gold really does an amazing job. If I only come up to a small fraction of the way he did it, it would be my honor. Here's what Rabbi Berkowitz says.
Let us take examples. Let's take the very first example.
This is Rabbi
Berkowitz. The halakhi is that so long as Jews are in Golis, this is a mishning, it's a gemara in Ksubis, it's a halakha, the Rambam brings it down, all are in agreement without exception, there are no two opinions. Halakha, you're not allowed to go and start up with the nations of the world so long as Jews are in Golis. When start up, meaning provoke them, try to antagonize them, try to get them to war. You're not allowed to.
Where is that?
This is the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara learns it from different psukim. The Gemara says that the Jews swore that when they were going into Golis. That is part of accepting the fact that God has put us into Golis. If God put us into Golis, it's for a purpose. If we feel that we can end the Golis on our own, we are doubting God's having put us into Golis.
Okay, so everybody heard Rabbi Berkowitz in his lecture about religious Zionism. You didn't hear what he said? Were you able to hear him? Yes.
Yes.
Rabbi Berkowitz,
yes,
in his statement was talking about the Gimel Shvuot, the three oaths that the Jews supposedly took, one of them which prohibits the Jews from rebelling against the non-Jews. And he said, it's clear halacha. Nobody ever doubted this halacha. This is a well-known halacha, he claims. And therefore, for religious Zionists to attempt to come back to the land of Israel before God has brought us back is against the halacha. That's his argument. Now, first of all, I find it very strange in general, philosophically, that when God punishes, we have to accept the punishment. I assume that Rabbi Berkowitz believes that when a person becomes sick, it's because God wills it. And yet, I assume that he goes to doctors and he doesn't say, oh, if God willed the person to be sick, you shouldn't try to fight God. But let I saw it's the philosophy I don't understand either. But that's not what I want to talk about. And you'll see Rabbi Gold responded to the claim that this is a what he called a halacha pluka, a halacha that nobody argues with. So here's Rabbi Gold's response.
This is clearly not halacha, not at all. In fact, it does not appear in the Rambam's Yaha Chazaka. It does not appear in any of the codes of law, not in the Rif, not in the Rosh, doesn't appear in the Torah Shulchan Aruch, is not brought in the Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Karo. In fact, the one place where the Rambam does make mention of the Shuos, which is toward the end of his letter to the Jews of Yemen, he says the following. Ulefi sheyoda Shlomo olam ha-shalom, because Shlomo of blessed memory knew the Ruach HaKodesh, with his divine spirit, Shahu Uma Hazod Ba'orach Zman Galuta Tiftzar Lihitno Ea Belo Itaharu Uya, that Jews will want during the time of the long Galus to begin to move toward Eretz Israel, not in the proper time, V'yovdu Bishvilzeh, and they will be lost because of this. V'yavo Aleim Tzarot, and terrible trouble will befall them. His hirami la'asodze, he warned them that they should not do it. Ve'ishbiya ha'uma al derech mashal, and he had the people swear, and the Rambam says, al derech mashal, this is a parable. There is no halacha. This is, say, good advice. The Maral refers to it as a gzera.
Okay, so again, Rabbi, how do I get out of this now? Not sure. Okay, Rabbi Gold very clearly showed that Rabbi Berkowitz said in this case was simply not based on the sources. Rabbi Berkowitz had claimed that it's a well-known, well-accepted, universally accepted halakha. It's simply not. I would like to now start talking about the topic of Mechemes Mitzvah. So the first thing we'll start with, and I hope we get to the sources, we'll go to the Chumash, the Torah. And the Torah gives us many halachas. Rabbi Zevin counts something like 17 halachas that relate to war. Not a halacha, 17 mitzvot. Of the 613 mitzvot, there's something like 17 of them that directly relate to war. Do you all see the screen, the psukim from Dvarim now?
No, we see a list.
No, and I already got rid of that thing on the bottom. How do I... here we go. Okay, stop share. Sorry about that. I was afraid we'd have some issues with this. Okay. Now you see the psukim in Dvarim?
No.
See the same list as before, sorry.
Well, thank you for letting me know. No, sorry. Okay.
Why won't you share your whole screen instead of sharing just one window?
That's what I did. Sharing the screen is this up here, right? Where I'm pointing at?
I can't see your screen.
Okay, well, I just shared what I think of the whole screen.
It was there for a minute.
I am only sharing one window, the chosen window of your screen.
Okay, well, let's see what I can do about that. I'll just do one window at a time, and we'll see what happens. Okay, we'll do one window at a time. You see the psukim from Dvarim now. The
yes.
Torah tells us, yes. When you go to war against your enemy, do not fear enemy. God is with you. Then the psukim tell us that you should appoint a kohen, a priest, who will go out with the people. And the priest will say to Varmarlem, Shema Yisrael, Atem Kriyum, meaning a motivational speaker. And the motivational speaker will speak to them and tell them not to fear and to go and fight the enemy because God is with you. And then will also give instruction. And he will tell them, speak to the people and say, Mi Yaish, Aksha Bona Bayit Chadash Velo Chanacho. If some person has built a new house and not yet dedicated it, let him go home and return to his house, lest he die in battle. And it continues. Maybe somebody planted a new vineyard and hasn't eaten from the fruit. Let him go home, lest he die in battle. And who's the person who married a new wife and hasn't yet lived with her? Let him go home, lest he die in battle. And the psukim go on, and they tell you, these are the people who are exempt from fighting. Meaning the Torah seems to think that going to war is something that the Jewish people do as a whole. There's no you go, you don't go. The Jewish people go out. And then the Torah tells us there are certain exceptions. That's the Torah. Now, we don't often ask him. We don't decide halacha from the Torah. So we're going to go right away to the next step. After we look at the psukim, the next place to look would be the Mishnah. And we're going to take a look now. Hold on. At the Mishnah. Again, you're not going to see it. Let's see if we can do this. Okay, do you now see the Mishnah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is the Mishnah in Sogta. And the Mishnah starts out, the Mishnah quotes the psukim in that we just saw. And it lists them all. It says, Mia Shabbara Bayit, who's going to build a house, or Mia Isha Shanata Karim, who planted the vineyard, or Mia Isha Eris Isha, who got married. All of these, Paul Elu, Chomim Devrekohe, they hear the priest talking, and they go back, Vechozrim, they return from the war. They're not fully exempt from the war effort. Misapkin, Mayin, Omozon, Umitan, and Ethadrachim. They still have to participate in the war effort. They're just not the combat soldiers. The Mishnah then continues, the Elu She'enan Chozrin. There's a list of those who do not leave the war effort at all. They don't leave the combat zone. If your person built not a house, but only a gate, he didn't plant the full vineyard, he remarried his divorced wife, these people don't go back at all. And then it says, the Elu She'en Zazimim Koman. There's a list of people who don't participate at all, not as combat soldiers, and not in the home front. And it lists those. And then it goes on and tells you that the motivational speaker, the Kohen, continues to talk to them and say there's one more category. Those who are fearful, those who might spread fear among the troops, those who might demoralize the troops, they go home as well. And then the Mishnah gives a crucial, crucial line. The Mishnah says, Bamed Dvarim Amurim. When are there any exemptions in the war? Bamilchemet Harishut. In an optional war. Aval Bamilchemet Mitzvah. In an obligatory war. In a war that's a mitzvah. Hakol Yotzin. Every Jew must participate. Afilu Chotan Michedro V'Kala Mechupata. Even the bride and the groom. And Omer Av Yehuda Bamed Dvarim Amurim Bamilchemet Mitzvah. The same thing. He just uses different phrases, Mechemet Mitzvah as opposed to Mechemet Chov as opposed to Mechemet Mitzvah. But it seems that the Mishnah says all of these exemptions are only in one case, Mechemet Rishut. There's a two-tier system. There's Mechemet Rishut and Mechemet Mitzvah. In a Mechemet Rishut, we have exemptions. Mechemet Mitzvah, everybody. There is no exception, must participate. And what do we mean by everybody must participate? Well, the Chazon Ish. For those not familiar with the Chazon Ish, he was really the leader of the Haredi world. Hold on. Let's see if we can get the Chazon Ish up. How do I close this now? Now do you see my list?
Yeah.
And now you see the Chazon Ish.
Yes.
Okay, the Chazon Ish was the leader of the Haredi community, lived in Bnei Brak in the 1940s and 50s. And the Chazon Ish said very clearly, if you see, do you see my mouse?
Yeah.
Moving around up here on the top left?
Yes.
He said,
yes.
Give us a minute, hold on a second. Sorry, the Chazon Ish. You want to go to the Chazon Ish says over here that Nira, the Hodisnan, what we learned in the Mishnah, Mechemes Mitzvah, Afil Chosn Mechedro, Lo Mayu Bizman Shetshrichen Lazosan Linitzachan Al Mechama. It's not talking about with a shortage of soldiers. The Zepshita, obviously, if there's the Jews are engaged in a war and there's a shortage of soldiers, everybody must participate. Rather, the Mishnah says that in Milchemes Mitzvah, even a bride and groom have to go. He says that's talking about afilu bizman she'ein tzorach el mispar misuyam. We only need a limited number of soldiers. Hayirshut l'kach katan mechedro. The general in charge, the king, the government, can take whoever they want. She'ein lachzirun shum zchus Milchemes Mitzvah. Chayim b'Milchemes Rishut. An optional war, in a pattern, Ella Bizman Shin Sachon Yisrael clear ban. Shemisparts of Ashitzorch ban, Yesh Pladan. That even an optional war, those who are exempt only when there are enough soldiers. He said, obviously, if the battle is going to depend on how many people we have, we don't have enough, the Chazon Ish says, then everybody must participate. Okay, so what we're missing now, but what seems to be crucial, is a definition. What is a Milchemet Mitzvah? What's an obligatory war? And what's a Milchemet Rishut? What's an optional war? And now we go back to the Gemara for that. The Gemara on that mission that we looked at a minute ago gives us a definition. And the Gemara tells us, by the way, and the Rambam passed like this. The Rambam had said earlier, B'med v'mamurim, t'machzir nanosha, when do people get an exemption? That's only by a Mechemet Rishut, a Mechemet Mitzvah, Kol Yotzin. And now the Gemara tells us, what is Mechemet Mitzvah and what is a Mechemet Rishut? Amar Rav Yochanan, we'll skip that here, hold on, Amar Rava, Mechemet Yehoshua Lechbosh, the war that Joshua engaged in order to conquer the land, Divrei HaKol Chov, Milchamot Beit David, Leravacha, the wars that King David engaged in order to expand his boundary, that's Divrei HaKol Rishut. Ki pligi, and where there's a debate, is only about if it's some sort of preemptive strike. But everybody agrees, according to the Gemara, what is Mechemet Mitzvah, conquering the land of Israel, or at least Joshua conquering the land of Israel, what's an optional war, expanding the boundaries. And the Rambam rules very similar to this, The Rambam starts out, and this is going to be crucial. The Rambam's discussion of the wars, the laws of war, appear in a section called Hilchot Melachim, the law of kings. And under the law of kings, there are lots of different halachot. And the Rambam in the fifth chapter discusses war. He starts off, Ein hamelech milcham tchila, ela milcham mitzvah. King, before he engages in other kinds of war, initially the only war we should do is milcham mitzvah. And now the Rambam doesn't leave us hanging. He says, Ve'ezu hi milcham mitzvah. What is this obligatory war? Zu milchamet shivat amamim. That's the war to conquer the land of Israel, the seven nations who occupied it. Mechamet Amalek, the war to annihilate Amalek. U ve Ezrat Yisrael miyatzar shavalehem. And it's a war to save the Jews from an enemy that has attacked them. So the Rambam gives three definitions of, or three examples of a Mechamet Mitzvah. What is it? The three are the war of the capture the seven nations, the war to annihilate Amalek, and a war to save Jews from an attacking enemy. Then the Rambam tells us, "Rachakach nilcham b'mechemes b'tus, b'mechemes nilcham b'msharim armim." The king can engage in an optional war, and that's the kind of war where he wants to expand the boundaries or expand the glory of Israel. And he gives a very important distinction. Milchemis mitzvah, the Rambam says, king he doesn't have to get permission from the high court. The Rambam says, if the king wants to engage in a milchemis mitzvah, he sees, oh, I have a good opportunity to annihilate Amalek. It sounds like he could just go out and do it. And he forces the nation to participate. Do an optional war in a motziamba LLP building shall shiva v'yachad. He needed permission of the high court before he can engage in an optional war. Okay, so it seems pretty straightforward. The Rambam has told us what's the mechamed mitzvah, what's the mechamed reshut. Mechamed mitzvah has three definitions. Mechamed reshut is any other war, and then we have the rules about you have exemptions mechamed mitzvah. You don't have exemptions mechamed reshut. A king can engage in Muhammad's mitzvah, it sounds like, on his own. Muhammad Rishut, he needs permission from the high court. It seems pretty straightforward. And now what I would like to do is see what Rabbi Berkowitz has to say about this. So we're going to now go to Rabbi Berkowitz and hear what he has to say.
Now, first of all, it is clear from the Rambam, both from the title of this section in Rambam, as well as from these halachas, that going to war really calls for a king.
Does everybody see and hear Rabbi Berkowitz?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so just this is a key point. Listen to what he says.
Of this section in Rambam, both from the title of this section in Rambam, as well as from these halachas, that going to war really calls for a king. There's no mention of war without a king. Whether it's Milchemes Mitzvah, Milchemes Rishus, the halachas of Milchama, of war, call for a king. When Shmuel Avi is approached by Klal Yisrael to appoint a king, they say straight out, Sheilech Lefanenu, who's going to go in front of us in battle, and that's the way it was if you look through all of, whether it's David HaMelech or all of the kings, both in Yehuda and Yisrael, in Sefer Malachim, the king led the nation in battle. But the Rambam says a chiddush, all you need is the king. For Milchemes Mitzvah, he does not need a permission of the Sanhedrin. Now this is the Rambam Shita, at least in the Yad here in Mishneh Torah.
Okay, so what Rabbi Berkowitz says over here, at the very beginning, he says, from the fact that the Rambam places this in the law of kings, this indicates that you need a king for war. And furthermore, he says that we never heard of such a concept of war without a king, that war, by definition, requires an anointed Jewish king. a fascinating argument to make. Because, again, if we go back and we look at the Rambam did not say that. The Rambam said, that when you have a king, all right, a king should not engage in wars other than Mechamed Mitzvah. The Rambam did not say the converse. The Rambam didn't say you can't have a halachically sanctioned war without a king. More than that, the fact that the Rambam placed these laws in Hilchos Melachim is exactly what Rabbi Berkowitz said, except he didn't say it clearly. He said when the Jews asked for a king, they said, and he'll lead us in battle. And Shmuel HaNavi said, yes, and the king will take your people to go to war. Meaning that an essential role of the king is his role in fighting wars. It doesn't mean that necessary for war is to have a king. And just to give you a few counterexamples, later on in Hilchos Melachim, the Rambam puts all of the laws about Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, the seven Noahite laws, all the laws that apply to non-Jews. It would be very strange to say that those laws don't apply if you don't have a king, just because the Rambam put them in Hilchos Melachim. He put them in Hilchos Melachim for a different reason, that when we have a king, the king makes us more of a united Jewish nation, and there's Jews, and then you have the B'nai Noach. Or, I think an even stronger example, where does the Rambam place the laws of Hallel? Hallel that we say on the holidays, Hallel that we say on Hanukkah, that we say on Yom HaTzimut, that we say half Hallel Rosh Chodesh. Where are those laws? If you asked me, I would have thought those laws should be in the section about prayer and Hilchos Tefillah. But the Rambam thought otherwise. Where did the Rambam put the laws of Hallel? Rambam put them Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah, specifically in the section about Chanukah. And he tells you, all those days of Chanukah, you say Hallel. And he goes on and on and on. We're not going to learn Hilchos Chanukah today. But the Rambam put all the laws of Chanukah, all those of Hallel in the laws of Chanukah. Why? If I was following Rabbi Berkowitz's understanding, it would be because, well, to say Hallel, I need Chanukah. But it's the exact opposite. He put them there because an essential feature of Chanukah is the Hallel. But there are a lot of other days when you do Hallel as well. So too, an essential obligation of the king is his conducting war. Therefore, he put that in the section of the laws of king. But it's not that in order to have war, you need a king. So I find it very interesting. And again, there may be other ways of understanding this. But I think that some of these counterexamples make it very clear that the need, that the Rambam put the laws of war in the section about kings is to tell us something about a king, not to tell us something about war. And I don't know of any other sources that seem to require a king. Now, the Rambam is not the only one who discussed this topic. So let's see what Rabbi Berkowitz tells us about the Ramban.
The Ramban, at the end of Sefer HaMitzvos, argues with what the Rambam writes. Well, first he's arguing.
Just to clarify, the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam has this halachic work, the Yad Chazakah, or the Mishnah Torah, which is what we've seen till now. The Rambam also has his Sefer HaMitzvot. The Sefer HaMitzvot is the Rambam's listing of the 613 commandments. At the beginning of it, he gives his rules of how he's defining a mitzvah, how he's deciding what to put in the 613, what not to put in the 613, and then he delineates all the 613 commandments. The Ramban, Nachmanides, argued on both. He has principles that he disagreed with, as well as certain mitzvahs that he thinks were left out. And here Rabbi Berkowitz is telling us about one of those things that the Ramban added.
That the Rambam doesn't bring a mitzvah that the king has to consult with the Sanhedrin and the Urim V'Tumim. He writes that he's talking about the Urim V'Tumim. Hu shemitzvah o'amelech. He says this is a mitzvah that the Rambam did not count. It's a mitzvah on the king. Ola shofet hamotzi ha'am la'melchama be'melchemes rishus be'melchemes mitzvah lish'ol bu'urim v'tumim t'chila va'alpihem yisnaheg.
Okay, so Berkowitz quotes here Ramban. Ramban, Nachmanides says, there's a mitzvah the Rambam left out, and he tells us which mitzvah he would remove from the 613 of the Rambam, and he says that he would add instead this mitzvah that the king, when he goes out to war, has to consult with the Urim V'Tumim. Well, let's take a look at what the Ramban said. Here is Ramban. And the Ramban said, indeed says, V'yeshli mitzvah, mistapek olay, there's a mitzvah that I think has to be, V'hu shi'irli mitzvah al ha-melech, o al ha-shofet, u'mi sha'am b'shuto, lo'tzim l'tzava b'mechemet r'shut. So he says, there is a commandment, there is a mitzvah on either the king or the judge or whoever it is who is authorized to lead the Jews in a mechemet r'shut, and it's the mitzvah of this person. And we have three options here. It's a king, it's a shofet, it's a leader who leads them to war, that when there's a war, he should go out, he should consult with the Urim V'Tumim before going out to war. Now, what's fascinating here is Rabbi Berkowitz, when he continues his explanation, he says, no mitzvah today could be a mitzvah, a mechemet mitzvah, because the Ramban requires that the king consult with the Urim V'Tumim. What's very interesting is that the Ramban nowhere gave this as a conditional. The Ramban never said, if you don't consult with the Urim V'Tumim, it's not a mechemet mitzvah. The Ramban said, when there is a war, there is a mitzvah to consult with the Urim V'Tumim. If you don't do the mitzvah, you violated a mitzvah. It doesn't change the categorization of the war. It's very similar to, let me pick another mitzvah. If you go look at the Rambam, and the Ramban doesn't disagree, nobody disagrees, there's a mitzvah called Yad V'Yeted. In a war, we'll see in a minute, maybe only a Mechemet mitzvah, there's an obligation on the Jewish army to maintain a holy environment in the military camp. And part of that is that you have to have a separate area designated outside of the military camp where one goes to relieve themselves. And in your military equipment, you even have to have a shovel in order to bury after you relieve yourself. That's a mitzvah from the Torah called Yad V'Yeted. Nobody argues that that's a biblical commandment. And yet it would seem absurd to say that if the Jewish army did not do the mitzvah of Yad and Yeted, that would say that this Mechemet mitzvah is no longer categorized as a Mechemet mitzvah. It would simply mean that the Jews didn't carry out this particular mitzvah. So to hear, all the Ramban said is that there is a positive obligation upon the leader, whoever it may be, to consult the Urim V'Tumim. And if they did it, they violated this mitzvah. It doesn't downgrade the war from Mechemet mitzvah to Mechemet Rishut, or Mechemet Rishut to something else. And just to continue here on this Ramban, Rabbi Berkowitz also says,
based on the Ramban, it's clear that you cannot have Mechemet mitzvah today. Because you need a Melech, Sanhedrin, and Urim V'Tumim. How about the Ramban? The Ramban just seems to say that you need a Melech. He doesn't mention Urim V'Tumim, and he says clearly that you don't need the Sanhedrin for that. We have the stira from the Rambam in his Agdama. But it would seem like, according to the Rambam at least, you need a king. And without a king, it doesn't work. The Ramban added the word shofet, which means the shoftim in the days of the shoftim, before the Beis HaMikdash, we didn't yet have a king, but we had Urim V'Tumim, and we had a Sanhedrin. The Shoftim too could take the people out to battle. They also had the status of king with regard to battle.
So, the Rabbi Berkowitz is saying over here, this Ramban that we just saw, teaches us, first of all, that Ramban holds that without Urim v'Tumim, you can't have a Melchemes Mitzvah, something that, as I explained, seems difficult. And furthermore, he interprets this word of shofet as being not a judge at some period in Jewish history, but specifically after the time of Moshe, after Moses, there was Joshua. After Joshua, after Yeshua, there was a period of the shoftim, and that was then followed by the kings, Shaul and David and Shlomo, etc. And he's understanding that the Ramban, strangely, is telling us about a mitzvah that applied to those shoftim. Why the Ramban would have said that, I don't know. It's also, he's clearly saying that it's mitzvah ala melech, o ala shofet, or it's talking about somebody, any leader, any general, any elected democratic leader, any leader who takes the people out to war. Meaning, Rabbi Berkowitz got to quote his last few words there. And he therefore interpreted Shofet as being very narrow, the period of the Shoftim, of the judges. Okay, so he has argued that according to the Rambam, you can't have a Melchemes Mitzvah today because you need a king. And he has argued that according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, we can't have a Melchemes Mitzvah because you need Urim V'Tumim. As I've mentioned, it seems to me that neither one of them seems to be rooted in sources. The Rambam never stated that you need a king. He simply said that the king, when he becomes king, should engage in Melchemes Mitzvah. And the Ramban never said that the definition of the war is dependent on following this mitzvah. He said that when there is a war, this is one of the mitzvot that applies. There's the mitzvah to send back the guy who built the new house. There's the mitzvah to make sure you have a shovel among your equipment. And there's a mitzvah to consult the Urim V'Tumim. But not fulfilling any of these mitzvahs in no way, it seems to me, would change the status of the war. There is one interesting Rambam, which may say that there's a problem defining something as a Melchemes Mitzvah. Let's hear Rabbi Berkowitz on this Rambam.
The Rambam, in his Hagdama to Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Hagdama of Sefer HaMitzvahs consists of first the Shoroshim, where he defines what is counted as a mitzvah and what not. And then, at the very end, he gives a brief introduction to mitzvahs. One of the things he mentions is that some mitzvahs only apply when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Other mitzvahs apply all the time. And he mentions that all of those things that obviously need a Beis HaMikdash, he doesn't have to go and repeat that it does not apply when there is no Beis HaMikdash. And he gives this example. And he writes, V'yodua, Shahamolchomos v'kibush ha'arotzos. You don't have that in front of you. The Melchomos and kibush ha'arotzos lo yie ele b'melech uva'atzas Sanhedri gedola v'kohen godol.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting source. And as we'll see, I'm not exactly sure what to do with it. Well, let's take a look. Here is the Rambam in his introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot. In the introduction, as I said, Rambam lays out all his principles. And in the Sefer HaMitzvot, in general, the Rambam lists the 613 mitzvot, and then for each mitzvah, he gives you basic rules about the mitzvah, including when it applies and to whom it applies. Men, women, Kohanim, Levim, when, with the Beis HaMikdash, not with the Beis HaMikdash, in the land of Israel, out of the land of Israel. And at the very, very little, the last lines of his introduction, he says that things that don't need to be said, I'm not going to say. I'm going to be concise. For example, everybody knows in Anoshim Chayavot certain things. We know that women don't participate in the Beis Din system. They're not witnesses. They're not judges. Women can't offer sacrifices by their own hand. They're not kohanim. Lomar, Zot in Nashim Chayavit Ba, is any mitzvah that everybody knows doesn't apply to women, like those that have to do with courts or those that apply to war, the Rambam says, I'm not going to mention that it doesn't apply to women. So too, he says, V'yadua gamken shehakorbanot kulam lo yakrivam ki'im b'migdash v'shelo hudra avodah chutz la'azara. Everybody knows that sacrifices are only the base of Migdash. Furthermore, v'chein dinin afashas lo yadunim b'hem ele b'yoz ha'migdash kayim. You can't judge capital cases if there's no base of Migdash. He goes on and on, saying other things that don't apply. And he says, any mitzvah that has to do with sacrifices, or Beit HaMikdash, or capital punishment, or high court, I'm not going to have to state that it only applies when there's a Beit HaMikdash, because everybody knows that. Now, I just want to point out, it says here, Obu Mechemet Rishut. I took this from a version of the Rambam that was printed in Lakewood, just so you know that I wasn't looking for an easy way out, yeah? But, in many other versions, actually says over here, Mechemet Rishut, O Mechemet Mitzvah. And the Rambam here, very puzzlingly, says that sacrifices, capital cases, things that have to do with king or with war only apply if there's a temple. If there's no temple, they don't apply. And therefore, he says, I'm not going to write that they only apply, that they don't apply if there's no Beit HaMikdash. This whole paragraph is very strange because from the beginning, he says sacrifices only apply if there's a temple. The Rambam himself in his Yad Chazakah, when he writes about sacrifices, says explicitly that you could bring sacrifices even without a Beit HaMikdash. As long as you have the altar and Kohanim who are dressed in the Big De Kahuna, you could bring sacrifices even without an existing temple. And he says you can't have war without a temple. As we saw in his Laws of King, he never says that that's a requirement. So this whole paragraph is one big enigma. From here, I wouldn't say Rambam says Mechemes Mitzvah only if there's a temple. Because then I'd have to say, Rambam says sacrifices only if there's a temple. And he doesn't say that. He later on says explicitly that it's not the case. So I'm not sure what to do with this. As Rabbi Berkowitz himself said, that this piece of his introduction, and this is literally the very, very end of his introduction, seems to contradict what he said in the Yad Chazakah. So I wouldn't learn anything from this. Okay. Now, as I mentioned, the Rambam isn't the only one who gave us a definition. The Ramban gave us a definition of a Mechemes Mitzvah. The Ramban says another law that the Rambam left out is this mitzvah over here. Mitzvah Revi Shestavu is L'Resha Ta'aretz Shenotan Ha'el Yidborach V'Yitzaleh L'Avotenu L'Avam Yitzchak Yaakov. It's a positive commandment, one of the 613 commandments, to inherit the land of Israel, to conquer it, to settle it. V'lona azva b'yad zulateinu. We shouldn't leave min ha'umot al shmama. We are not permitted to leave it under the rule of other nations, nor to leave it desolate. It's a mitzvah to sell the land. V'u amro lahem v'arashtem et ha'aretz yishavtem ba. It's a verse in the Torah. God said, you should conquer the land and settle it. Because I gave it to you to settle. And the Ramban continues. And he says, Vizuhi, at the very top here, Vizuhi, Shechachomim Koromoto, Milchemet Mitzvah. This conquering of the land, the Ramban says, is a Mechemet Mitzvah. He says, when the sages talked about Mechemet Mitzvah over there in the Mishnahs and Sota, it was talking about this. It was talking about the war to conquer the land. He says, Hooray, down here, and if you see my mouse, Hooray, Nitzavinu, B'kibush, B'chol HaDorot. It's not limited to Joshua. It's not limited to when they first came into the land. This is a positive commandment for all generations, according to the Ramban, to conquer the land. So we have seen now, according to the Rambam, there are three types of Mechametz Mitzvah. Again, we want to know, is what's going on today Mechametz Mitzvah? Is this war that unfortunately we've been involved in now for over a year, is a Mechametz Mitzvah? The Rambam gave us three types of Mechametz Mitzvah: conquering the land in the time of Joshua, defeating Amalek, and defending the Jews against an enemy who attacks. Ramban adds another category, according to him, of Mechametz Mitzvah, and that is conquering the land of Israel in any and all generations. We saw that Rabbi Berkowitz wanted to say, despite the Ramban, maybe it's not Mechametz Mitzvah, because he thinks that according to the Rambam, you need a king. I don't see that in the sources. He said it's not a Mechametz Mitzvah according to the Ramban, because the Ramban says that you have to consult the Urim V'Tumim for it to be Mechametz Mitzvah. Again, I don't see that in the sources. The Ramban seems to simply be saying to be that during a war, you should consult with the Urim V'Tumim. But that doesn't change the categorization. All of this is sources from the time of the Gemara and medieval period. As I mentioned, there aren't a lot of sources that deal with Mechametz Mitzvah in most of the halachic literature. Fascinatingly, there is actually, as Rabbi Berkowitz pointed out in the Mishpacha article, there is a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, a respondent that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote. Very difficult to understand exactly what he wants. I would like to read it with you, and let's see what we can make of it. Rav Moshe Feinstein usually has tshuvas with lots of sources from the Gemaras, analysis of a Tosfos, other Rishonim. He doesn't usually bring later authorities, and he usually answers very practical, specific questions. There is a very short, we'll see in a minute, tshuva of Rav Moshe, written Kaf Hei Tishrei Tavshin Lamed. It turns out that's immediately after the signing of the Camp David Accords. This is 1978, immediately after the signing of the Camp David Accords. And it was written to Rabbi Nachum Trabnik, who was the chief rabbi of Kfar Chabad. Now, unfortunately, and this comes up more than once, in the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't give us the question. We don't know what he was asked. But from the question, from the answer, you could sometimes tell what the question is. It seems to me, well, we know Chabad was very against the Camp David Accords. It seems here that the chief rabbi of Kfar Chabad was trying to get out of Rav Moshe Feinstein also in opposition to the Camp David Accords. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't fall for that. He starts, Hinei kamdu mishir du'a darkei, you know my way. Asher inni mamaher lashiv af l'sholim oti. I don't rush to answer. Uledvarim shelo nishalti, things that I'm not asked, loshai chlal shashiv. I'm not going to answer the things I wasn't asked. Af shoya zesh she'ela pratit. Even if it's a private question, b'dini yisra v'hetta, b'kol tshuvotai af l'sholim oti, you rock b'nyanim pratiyam. I deal with personal, specific questions. Obviously, Rav Trebnik had asked him a question about if the Camp David Accords are permitted, should the state of Israel engage in it, something of that nature. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, that's not my nature. I answer those kind of questions. I answer private questions. Also, only if it's not going to infringe on another rabbi. V'sheila klolis, a general question. Lo shafti mi olam. I don't answer general questions. So far, this first part, he's saying, I don't like this question. And if we skip down to the end, he says also, v'lo dandi klum, af lo machshova. I don't think about this kind of question you asked me. Aren't asking me these kind of questions? And he goes on and says, I don't answer. Just this little piece in the middle is relevant. It says, maybe you heard something I once said in a shir to my students. Mash ani sover, I hold, Sh'inyan milchama, kevin shenogel lepikuch nefesh, tzorch tzivui miuchad v'um v'tumum v'sanhedrin. Maybe you heard that I hold, he says, that a war obviously involves life and death decisions, therefore it needs um v'tumum and sanhedrin, An era of Moshe Feinstein says something fascinating. Af Mechametz Mitzvah ke Mechametz Amalek. He says, even a Mechametz Mitzvah needs the instruction of the High Court and the Uvatumim. All the kings in the Bible, he says, only if they had instructions from the court or from the Uvatumim did they go fight Amalek. The Rav Moshe Feinstein brings no Gemara, no Rambam, simply a historical proof from the Tanakh, from the Bible, that from Mechametz Mitzvah, you need Uvatumim and the High Court. Now, I would read into this, you could tell me if you agree here, that if a king violates this and goes out to fight Amalek, he's still calling it a Mechametz Mitzvah. He says, after Mechametz Mitzvah, Kim Mechametz Amalek, you need these things. He still calls it Mechametz Mitzvah. He says, V'zeh dover boru muchach, shelo shayich liflogos. More than that, he says, this is obvious. V'rak v'shenoflu ha'akum al Yisrael, when in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, when the Greeks, the Yevonim attacked the Jews, now the Jews need to save themselves. In that case, he says, the third type of Mechametz Mitzvah, at least that's how I read this, he doesn't use the word Mechametz Mitzvah, the third type of Mechametz Mitzvah in the Rambam, then you can go out even without Urim V'Tumim Sanhedrin, and the example he brings is that the Maccabees went out to fight when they were attacked. They went out. There was no king. There was no Urim V'Tumim. There was no permission of the Sanhedrin. They simply went out because they were defending themselves. And this is, if you remember, the third category of Mechametz Mitzvah according to the Rambam. And Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to be saying that you could indeed go out without any permission. So again, just before I ask for your feedback on this, because I'd be interested to hear how you read this, Eves Moshe, just to go back to, hold on. Well, we saw at the very, very beginning, Rabbi Berkowitz quoted the Rambam as saying, quoted the Eves Moshe as saying, for the tshuva in which he writes that to meet the definition of a Mechametz Mitzvah, you need a Jewish king, you need the Urim V'Tumim. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein did not say Jewish king, he said Sanhedrin. He said, V'tumim. I don't think Rav Moshe said to meet the definition. He said it's a mitzvah when you go out on Mechametz Mitzvah to do those. And Rav Moshe Feinstein had the third category. He first started with Amalek, and he said what Rav Berkowitz says. The third category of self-defense, Rav Moshe says, you don't need these things. Now, again, this is not a very simple Igros Moshe to understand. But that's my understanding of it. And that's what, again, sorry, let's just play. He says it in his lecture.
Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this shaila. Well, let's see what he writes. V'ulei shamu mimeni ma shamarti l'talmidai ma shani sover. Maybe they heard things that I spoke out as we were learning to my Talmidim, which is not Psak.
And he said it's not psak. Meaning again, Rav Moshe was talking theory. Rav Moshe Feinstein was simply engaged in the Beis Medrash. And he at one point said this. He gave no psak, not to the state of Israel, nor to any individual.
Rav Moshe certainly is paskeding like the Ramban. Not like the Rambam that we have here. He is paskening that for Milchemes Mitzvah, you need the Sanhedrin and the Urim V'Tumim.
And again, the Ramban did not say that.
Not
the Ramban
paskening said, everything.
Well, I'm sorry?
He wasn't paskening.
No, and the Ramban said there's a mitzvah that when you go to war, you have to Urim V'Tumim. He never said that was part of the definition of Milchemes Mitzvah. I see it's late and I want to get to three quick 20th century sources, so I'm going to not play the rest of this piece. Here's the whole shiur is online. You could listen. So what I would like to do now is ask, are there any contemporary authorities who have actually ruled on this question? And for that, I'm not going to go to Rav Moshe Feinstein on the Lower East Side. Let's see what some Israeli Poskim have said in the 20th century. So the first one we're going to start with is Rav Zevin. Rav Zevin is a very interesting rabbi, Posek. He wrote a book called L'Or Halacha. It came out before the 1948 war. He then published a revised edition after the 1948 war, and he was very clear. You all could see the source here? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, he says, B'muvan ha-mitzumtzam shel zman hazeh b'nogei l'milchama. Klomi b'yamim anu. In the early 1950s, there's a chinu l'tkumat medina Yisrael atzmit, that we've been privileged to have an independent Jewish state. M'shuchereret mi'ol ma'chuyot m'chibut guliot. Harei mechemet ha-shichror, War of Independence, Baror, it's clear, Shoyla Kol Dine Mechemez Mitzvah V'chova, it's totally obvious to him that it has the halacha of Mechemez Mitzvah. M'shtei B'chino, the two reasons that we saw. One, as they saw Miat Tzah Shabalem, to save the Jews from an enemy that came upon them, the Rambam. V'kibush Aretz, L'edat HaRamban, doing Mitzvah Taseh, who says both according to the Rambam and Ramban, this is a Mechemez Mitzvah. And then we have, hold on, the Tzitz Eliezer. The Tzitz Eliezer, one of the most well-known authorities in the land of Israel in the mid to late 20th century. And he has two things. First, he says over here, he had a very, very long tshuva, where he talks about war, and he says, Hamlechama ha'chshaviyot. This is his summary, because it was too long, so he then put his own summary. And he brings, point by point, the summary of his very, very long tshuva. He says, HaMechama ha'astuyi po ba'arteinu kedusha, ilidnat ha'ramban, mechamas mitzvah, ki mitzvah aleinu b'chol adod, lo laniach et ha'aretz b'yad zolateinu. He says, this is clearly a mechamas mitzvah, all the wars that we've had, War of Independence, Six-Day War, certainly the current war, because the Ramban says that to keep the land of Israel in Jewish hands is by definition a mechamed mitzvah. So the Ramban says, so the Tzitz Eliezer says that the current wars are mechamed mitzvah. Then, in another place, in a fascinating tshuva, he says, this is a very, very long tshuva, trying to explain, those of you still not living in the land of Israel, this tshuva is to explain why, according to Halacha, it would be a very good idea to make Aliyah. And then he adds a very interesting point. This Shenit, Yesh Lamar, Shilafia Matzav Achshavi, according to the current situation here in the land of Israel, Shahmidinanim Tsebo, that we find ourselves in, Shizata, that nowadays, Yotzik Mat Mitchilaso Vihi, Mukefet Misaviv Oivim Mushpaim Harotsim Livlosta Chalila. We're surrounded by enemies who want to swallow up the country. Mutalet chovam yuchedet shel hachlotzo choshim l'maher la'alot arza l'avo l'ezrat Yisrael miyad tzar b'alehem. You, in outside of the land of Israel, you have an obligation, he says, to make aliyah and join us here in defending the land. Shenoveya michiyuv shel mechemet mitzvah. Kinifnek parambam. A mechemet mitzvah is that if we're attacked by our enemies, and the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenburg says that today, and he's not alive anymore. Certainly if he was alive today in 2024, we're surrounded by enemies who want to eat us up. He says, this is unquestionably a Mechemes Mitzvah. And therefore, those of you not yet in the land of Israel, that would be one more reason, one more motivation why you should make Aliyah. Participate in the Mechemes Mitzvah. And the final one that I want to show you is a very interesting one. Revel Yoshev. Revel Yoshev was considered one of the leading poskim of, again, second half of the 20th century, accepted by the Haredim. Do you all see the page here from Revel Yoshev? This is an amazing thing. Rav Shilat, who is the Rosh Yeshiva in the Shivan Ma'aleh Edumim today, his name used to be Rav Greenspan, and during the Yom Kippur War, 1973, he was in the army, and lucky for him, he was not stationed in the Golan or in the Sinai, but he was stationed on the Jordanian border. And as we know, the Jordanians never attacked. So Rav Shilat learned all of Masechet Brachot during that period. And he wrote a book about his Chidushei Torah that he thought of during the Yom Kippur War. In the back of this book, he has a tshuva that he received from Rebbe Yoshev. Rebbe Yoshev was, again, one of the leading Haredi poskim in the land of Israel. It's dated 12 Cheshbon Tavshin Lamed Daled, meaning sometime in late October, November 1973. It's clear that Rebbe Yoshev wrote this during the Yom Kippur War. And he addressed it to Yitzchak Greenspan, today known as Rav Yitzchak Shilat. And in there, as part of the tshuva, it's a tshuva discussing this mitzvah of Yad V'Yeted, of having a holy camp. He says that V'anan, we halo b'mechemet mitzvah kaskinen, your whole question about if this law applies nowadays or not, we are discussing a mechemet mitzvah. Meaning this is a very practical question. It was written in 1973, November 1973, for a soldier fighting in the war. And Rabbi Yoshev says, the question you ask me deals with a mechemes mitzvah. What's amazing is when this was republished in Rabbi Yoshev's book of tshuvas, you'll notice, unlike every other tshuva in this book, or almost everyone, I look through it, where there's an addressee and a date, those were left out over here. Notice it's missing. There's no addressee. It doesn't say Rav Greenspan. And it doesn't say November 1973. It has the entire tshuva. It does say that Avol b'mechemes mitzvah, v'anan ol b'mechemes mitzvah skinen. You might think that in our theoretical discussion about this law, I'm talking about mechemes mitzvah. No, that's not what Rebbe Yoshev meant. Rebbe Yoshev is talking to Rav Greenspan, Rav Shilat, about a very specific question in November 1973. He's calling it a mechemes mitzvah. Very troubling. So somebody who I was discussing this with in our shul said very simply, he said, all of the people, and not necessarily Rabbi Berkowitz, I'm not picking on Rabbi Berkowitz, but all the discussion about what's the definition of a mechemes mitzvah, and is the current war mechemes mitzvah or not, and can I darshan in some word of the Ramban or the Rambam? He says all of that is clouding the discussion. And I think what he meant to say is, it seems to me that in halacha we have categorizations. So, for example, there are different halachot about Shabbat and a sick person. If he is in danger of dying, if he is merely slightly ill, if he has what's called a mere michush, he doesn't feel well. Is in what's called a chola nafal amita, is a chola kol gufo, is a chola echad evar. We have a lot of categorizations of a sick person. Nobody would say that if he doesn't fit some sort of categorizations, he's not sick. He's a chola. I know he's sick. And now in halacha, we need to define what kind of sick he is. Chola kol gufo, chola echad evar, michush bi'alma, chola sheyesh basakon, chola eid basakon. But everybody agrees that he's sick, and now I need to categorize him. It would seem to me that's what's going on here as well. There's a war. You can't tell me that what's taking place today is not a milchama. And now I need to categorize it. Is it mechemes mitzvah, mechemes reshus, mechemes chova, an illegal war? But it's a war. You can't do like many people do, and Rabbi Berkowitz, as part of his shir, that I didn't cut out this piece, he says, for sure, it's a big mitzvah to save Jews. But what we're engaged in is not milchemes mitzvah. It's the mitzvah of lo ta'amor al dam reyacha. The mitzvah of if you see someone drowning, you must save them. But it's that mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah of milchemes mitzvah, milchemes reshus. And I just don't see it. That discussion doesn't seem to even be recognized in the reality. There's a milchama. There's a war. And now I need to categorize the war. And it has to fit into something. An illegal war, but it's a war. Just like nobody will say, well, if a guy is not in his bed, it can't be that he's a chola. No, he's not a chola shenofel lemitoso, but he is a chola. He's a sick person. So too, there's a war, and I just need to know what category it falls in. And all of the pilpul seems to be clouding this very simple statement. And it's very important because while many people who say it's not a Mechamis mitzvah will agree there's a mitzvah of lo tamor al dam reyecha, to save another Jew, there are vast differences between Mechamis mitzvah and lo tamor al dam reyecha. For example, every Jew is obligated to save every other Jew. If you see a Jew drowning, you have to save him. Well, what if I see a Jew who needs a kidney? Do I have an obligation to give the kidney? No. Maybe I'm allowed to. But one is not obligated to risk their lives because of the mitzvah of lo tamor al dam reyecha. One is obligated to risk their life by definition in a mechamis mitzvah. And there are a lot of other differences between lo tamor and mechamis mitzvah. So I just want to end with a quote from two sources here. First, Rav Ariel. Where are we here? You know what? Before we get to Rav Ariel, hold on, sorry. Do you see Rav Ariel now? Someone just confirm.
No, sorry.
You don't? Yes. Okay. Let's try that again.
Yes, we can hear it. Yes.
Here we go. Do you see it now?
Yes.
Okay. So a few quick sources about Mechamis Mitzvah. The Rambam in Hilchot Shabbat, he is telling us when are you allowed to violate Shabbos in order to save someone, to help somebody. He starts over here. Uvdekachov Mazolus, meaning non-Jews, should sorrow ala Yoris Yisrael, who attacked a Jewish city, if it's simply their robbers, Shabbos, the Ein Osin Imohen Milchama. You can't launch a war against thieves. However, if they want to kill Jews, or they started a war, or they, no reason other than anti-Semitism, are starting up with a Jewish city, it's an obligation of all Jews to go out and help them. What's the Rambam talking about here? Harry said, on financial issues, you don't make a war. Implying here, he's talking about war. And what kind of war? If non-Jews attack a Jewish city, we violate Shabbos, it's a mitzvah, it's an obligation on all Jews to help them. And based on what he said in Hilchos Melachim, I would argue that he's talking about a Mechamis mitzvah over here. He didn't call it that, because that wasn't relevant. Here in Hilchos Shabbos, he's simply talking about if you could be Mechalel Shabbat or not. But he clearly says, and this, I think, is even talking about not in the land of Israel, not the entire country of Israel being attacked, a Jewish city, some other place, is being attacked. It's a Mechamis mitzvah for Jews to go out and help them, and to save them, and you violate Shabbos. And here's the English, and so on, and Rav Ariel. He brings it in a much broader context. There are those who want to avoid participating in what seems to be obviously Mechamis mitzvah. Rav Ariel says a Mechamis mitzvah is much broader than just saving Jewish lives. It's not lo tamod. It's kiddush Hashem. Mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is a super mitzvah. The mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem overrides pikuach nefesh, meaning one has to risk their lives for Kiddush Hashem. Umeata mevuar heitev madu b'machama in chatshvim b'shikulei sikunim shel yichidim. When you're planning a war strategy, you can't take into account that some soldier's life will be endangered. You need to plan the strategy in order to win the war. He said, winning a Mechamis mitzvah is more than just saving Jewish lives. It's the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. When the Jewish nation is downtrodden, that's a Chilul Hashem. When the Jewish nation goes out to save Jewish lives and to protect the honor of the Jewish people, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Rav Amital said it very beautifully. He said that why, he said, was his zecher, why was our generation, he said, of the Holocaust survivors privileged to see the establishment of a Jewish country? He says, were we holier, were we bigger tzaddikim than all the generations that came before us? Why were we so privileged? And he said his understanding is that the Holocaust was the greatest chilul Hashem in history. When the Jewish nation as a nation is so downtrodden, that's a chilul Hashem. The state of Israel, he said, gives an opportunity for a national Kiddush Hashem, which is a different order of magnitude than when individual Jews make Kiddush Hashem. And what Rav Ariel is saying, Rav Ariel is a well-known posek today in the religious Zionist community, he's saying that winning a Melchemes Mitzvah is a national Kiddush Hashem. And that's why one has to participate. That's why one risks their lives for a Melchemes Mitzvah. And the Rambam sees it as such also. The Rambam says, V'chol ha'nitam b'chol libo b'lo pachad. Anybody who participates in the war, in a Melchemes Mitzvah, without fear, v'tiyeh kavanato l'kadesh et Hashem levad. And his goal in participating, his sole intention is sanctification of God's name, and then you get all these promises from God. In other words, he says, Melchemes Mitzvah is not just another mitzvah, it's the super mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And I think it's an amazing thing what we've seen here in Israel in the last year, how large numbers of religious soldiers have gone to battle, have risked their life. Many have unfortunately given their life because what they understand and what seems to me from the sources that I presented them, and again, there are other people who seem to have other opinions, but what they understand to be a Melchemes Mitzvah, a Milchama that's defending the Jewish nation from a barbaric enemy that's attacking from all sides, and that they're participating in a Kiddush Hashem to negate the huge Chilul Hashem of what took place Simchas Torah a little over a year ago. And all I could say is kol hakavod to all of those boys, and I really don't see the other side. So if there are any questions, comments, I see there are a lot of things in the chat. I haven't been able to see them until now. And that's, if you have questions, comments.
Yes. Have you read the book by Rabbi Brody, The Ethics of Our Fighters?
I have not read it. I've seen reviews of it. I have not
I'm reviewing it. I think it's really good, and it agrees with you completely. It's very good, in my view. So I just thought I'd say.
Okay. There are actually two recent books on this subject. Neither of them have I seen at all. One of them is, as you said, Rabbi Brody's book. The other is by a guy from California. He's I can't remember his name right now. He's a well-known philanthropist, as well as he writes fascinating halachic work. And he's written in Hebrew. Rabbi Brody's book is in English. He's written in Hebrew a book about the laws of war. And his name is escaping me right now. But I haven't seen either of them. And again, let me just make it clear. I've used Rabbi Berkowitz as a foil in this shir. I don't know him personally. He has a reputation, indeed, as a well-known Talmid Chacham. There was nothing here that was said that is personal against him. I hope that you understand it as rather a halachic Torah disagreement. And again, there was nothing personal involved, but I thought I found it in the model of Rabbi Gold to use him as a foil in order to present the other side. So again, if there are any questions.
Rav Ari Adilan, I'll just say that the person you're talking about is Zvi Breisman.
Yes, correct. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, if there are other questions.
So Rav Ari, what is the main Haredi justification for resisting conscription?
So I don't want to try to present their position. From what I understand, their main the reason they don't want to go, this is not the justification, but the reason they don't want to go is they view it as a risk to their lifestyle, a risk that some of the boys may come back not Haredi or not religious. And that's their main reason for not wanting to go. Their justifications are many and varied. they'll quote these sources of saying it's not Milchemes Mitzvah. They'll quote the Rambam at the end of Hilchas Shmita of Yovel that supposedly they interpret as saying that those who are dedicated to Torah are exempt from participating. They'll quote sources, and they were legitimate sources, that say that Tamidei Chachamim don't need protection because their Torah is their protection. All of these arguments are, I think, easily refutable. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein did a phenomenal job. It's available online. He had an article in Tradition magazine called something about the theory or philosophy of Hesder. And Rav Lichtenstein argues that the Ramban was the biggest supporter of the Hesder idea. And it's a phenomenal article. And he talks about these various arguments, the one from Shevi Levi, the other Hilchas Shmita of Yovel, the one about Torah being protection, etc. But the real motivation is clear, that that they don't want to engage in the risk of the army affecting them. And I suspect that also they're not interested in the risk in their lives. Going to the army is risking one's life, as we've seen, unfortunately, too often in this war.
But if it's a milchama mitzvah, aren't they in a way obligated to risk their lives?
I would think so. But I have to tell you, and I said at the very beginning, that wasn't the topic I was going to talk about, because although they are related, they're not identical. So, for example, the Tzitz Eliezer, who I brought you, the Tzitz Eliezer, clearly holds that the wars of the state of Israel becomes mitzvah for both reasons. According to the Ramban and the Rambam, Tzitz Eliezer does hold that yeshiva boys should be exempt. Now, is his definition any quote-unquote Haredi, or he would have some way of defining what a yeshiva boy is. But the Tzitz Eliezer felt that they should be exempt. Rav Zevin, who I showed you also, thought it was Mechamez Mitzvah, also for both reasons. He also was not clear about the exemption for yeshiva students. So they don't necessarily go hand in hand. It's not a simple issue. But as I said, I think the main reason is the risks involved, the risks to the lifestyle, the risks to their lives, and the risks to their time. I mean, most thankfully, combat soldiers, while risking their lives, don't give their lives, but they do give of their time. And as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein liked to say, serving the army is the greatest chesed you'll ever do. You're doing chesed by defending the Jews 24/7 during that time that you're in the army. But you're not doing anything else. Many of these soldiers have lost a year of their life, meaning a year of their panasa. Their businesses have suffered. They've lost a year of university. They've lost a year. And the Haredim don't want to lose the time. They don't want to risk losing their lives. They don't want to risk losing their lifestyle. And again, when I mentioned that the Tzitz Eliezer said that there should be an exemption, and I mentioned that Rav Zevin maybe felt that, it could be they would feel different today. They were writing 40 years ago and 60 years ago, and it could be the current war is different. In any event, again, I don't want to make it an anti-Haredi bashing. I don't want to make it a Rabbi Berkowitz bashing. I wanted to present how I see the sources. I used Rabbi Berkowitz as a foil, but that's how I see the sources. So if there are any questions.
You did very well in presenting the material. You did very well in presenting the material.
Thank you. So again, if there are any questions or comments on the sources, if any of you have any other way of reading the Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's, again, not at all clear. Reading the Rambam's introduction, that business of needing a Beis Hamikdash, not at all clear. I would be very happy to hear if other people have other ways of reading it. Uh-huh. Otherwise,
usually the Haredi opinion is that Torah is what protects. That's what I've heard them say.
Yes, that's one of them. Hold on, let me just, it's Rabbi Tzvi Reisman is what the person in the chat is asking. Yes, some of them say that the Torah protects, and there are sources like that. There are sources, the Gemara's in Bava Batra, that are quoted the Halacha, that people who are full-time learners, that are real Tamidei Chachamim, are protected by their learning, do not have to contribute some of the taxes that go to building the protective wall around the city. I don't know how that would fit with the wall that Trump is about to build, but there are sources that say that Tamid HaChachamim. How do you define a Tamid HaChachamim? I don't know. That is certainly, I can't imagine that the Gemara that talks about Tamid HaChachamim not needing protection would apply to every single Haredi male aged 18. But again, I don't want to get into that. Whether it's categorized as Mechamas Mitzvah, we have here what seems to me a war. I don't know how else you could define it. And what category does it fit into? And that's what I try to present. So you could talk to Rabbi Kelman and someone else will present about the Haredi draft exemption. Okay. So in that case, thank you very much. And have a good day.
Thank you.
May the war end successfully soon, and all of the our soldiers come home safe and soon.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
So.
Anyway,
I'm going to say have a good Shabbos. Enjoy. Maybe we'll see you one of these days. Would you?